TGIDF, Chris.
TGIDF. I'm finally learning that.
Yay. And for all those who don't know what TGIDF is, it's thank goodness it's Divorce Friday. So we are here doing another episode of our child support guidelines series, which we've been doing since October 1st. We're doing a deep dive into all the different parts of the new 2021 child support guidelines that are reviewed every 4 years. They are, it's federally mandated that every state in the country review their guidelines. And this year we have some major changes, which is why we decided here on Divorce Friday to start our series on that. And we have a couple more episodes before we take a break for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then I think we'll be back and we're going to be doing an alimony series. So we're really gonna take a deep dive into alimony for our next topic after we're done with the child support guidelines.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that introduction. So we have a guest today, and our guest is Debbie Smith, who is a lawyer, a mediator, and a collaborative law attorney. She is on the board of the Massachusetts Collaborative Law Council. I'm sorry, I forget how to say these things. Where she co-chairs the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. She's also an adjunct professor at Suffolk University. And she's also a justice of the peace. So she deals not just with the divorce aspect, but her current project is to get some people married this weekend. So if you need to get married, then call Debbie. Right?
Awesome.
So you can find us on Facebook. This is where we're doing this, with Facebook Live. This morning we had a small glitch. And so you might have two recordings there, but we'll clean that up. If you are on the Facebook page, please like us and follow us. And if you found us on Twitter, like us there too. All right, so we're also on divorcefriday.com, and you can reach Diane and I at divorcefriday@gmail.com. That will get to both of us, and we will respond depending on whom you're trying to reach or what you're trying to address, okay? So at this point, this morning, we're talking for the whole series about child support guidelines. And so the child support guidelines are a process whereby a certain amount of money is provided from one parent to the other for the purpose of supporting the children. Sometimes, however, that is not enough. In fact, I think we might say that in the majority of cases, it's not enough. And so how do we deal with that, right? That's the topic for today, yeah. Right? So Diane, do you want to kick that off?
Sure. So, like Chris was saying, we do a lot of child support calculations for our clients. And a lot of times we know how expensive it is here in Massachusetts to raise children. And the amount that we're getting back from the guidelines sometimes is just not enough. And so we always have to have that tough conversation with the client, because a lot of times the mother, right, Deb, wants to stay in the home with the kids, and she just may not be able to afford it. And, you know, she's going to try really hard with her income. And then she was hoping that the child support would make it work. And it might be a situation where it kind of works, but not really. It's going to be really difficult for her. So like, that's one of the really hard conversations that we have with clients. And I'm assuming that you have those conversations too, when child support is not enough.
Well, you can't say it's always for the wife that wants to stay in the house.
I know.
It could be gender neutral. One of the parties may want to stay in the house, the other may want to leave. And but when you're dividing households, the splitting up households, there's never enough money. Yeah. Because people, especially in the Boston area and in other parts of Massachusetts, it's very expensive to live here. And people struggle to keep the one household, and when you make split it and have to create two households, there's usually not enough money. So what do you do about it? Obviously, just practical common sense is say, okay, what are we going to do? How can we save money? And what's the best thing we can do? My outlook is that you try to do whatever you can do to save money by working through alternative dispute resolution, like mediation, collaborative law, to try to not spend a lot of money on legal fees. and try to use alternative dispute resolution because you don't have enough money to do that. And that's the type of practice that I have. You want to say, okay, what can we do about housing? Because it's just so expensive here, because that's one of the big things. And so what can you do? You can get a roommate, housemate, or something like that. You move further away from the Boston area, live with family. Those are the kind of things, and just really practical, common sense things that you need to think about when you're doing that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of people aren't in the mindset to want to do that. They don't want to move out, further out of the city or from whatever town they're in. But it is a reality, and it is for both parties. What I always tell my clients is, again, like you were saying, there's only two ways to fix a cash flow issue when, you don't have enough income, and that is to increase your income or reduce your expenses, right? So that's really the only way to make it work. But I think that what's important is in this situation for clients to understand that both parties have to make some sacrifices. If they want the children to stay in the town or stay in the neighborhood with where their friends are in the same schools, both parties really have to make sacrifices. And what I try to tell my clients too, is that these sacrifices are temporary. It's not going to be forever. It's just going to be until things settle out, until you understand, until you get a better handle of what your expenses are and whatnot. But, the reality is that a lot of times if a party does say, okay, we can't right now, we really can't afford the mortgage payment, but then they look at the rental properties and they can't afford the rent either, the mortgage payment's actually less. So what are some ways that someone can, they can't rent, they may not be able to sell the house and then rent because they don't have enough income to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to stay in the house somehow.
So I mean, I think there are a fair number of people out there who continue to live in the same house. It works if you have separate quarters that are available in the house, or you can work more mostly, right? But the other option is obviously to move further out, because if you are inside 95, it's going to cost more. If you're inside 495, it's going to cost a little bit less. And if you're outside 495, it costs a little bit less more. Again, so there is a trade-off that needs to happen.
Also, you could someone could live with family or friends, or just try to figure out what you would do just to cut expenses. And as you said, it could be a temporary basis until you come up with a permanent plan. The other thing I suggest to clients is look at the budget. When you go to court, you have to do a financial statement. And a lot of people have no idea how much money they spend. Mm-hmm. And there's money that people spend. People spend money on things that are just that they can really cut back. If you think about that cup of coffee you get at Dunkin' or Starbucks and get it every day, and it's $3 or whatever it costs wherever you're going. If you cut that out, bring your lunches versus buying lunches, you can really cut your expenses down and save money that way. So it's really interesting that people don't realize how much money they do spend.
Yeah.
And when you calculate it out, it's you may be able to just really save just by doing very simple things.
Yeah, that's the conversation we always have, Chris, right? Like, and it almost seems in every episode that we've been talking about for child support, it comes down to the expenses and for the parties to really understand what their expenses are. And like you said, Deb, people have to file the financial statement, but a lot of times there's not enough lines on there. People don't realize that there's an addendum that they can fill out. And so they don't always do a deep dive into all their actual expenses.
I mean, in fairness, it's stressful to go through the course, obviously, and it's even more stressful to try to fill out that form, because it's pretty daunting.
Yeah, right? It is.
And it's also the way that people look at it is that they look at it as, it's a hoop that I have to jump through in order to go to court and get myself divorced. Right? But it is also a financial planning tool. Right, to plan the post-divorce area. And what you mentioned, Deb, about the coffee is probably very standard. It's, I used to be a cappuccino a day person and at Starbucks, and that adds up quite a bit, right? But what are some of the other ways that that people can cut cost?
Well, I wonder how many people that had memberships to a gym that are really expensive. I know my gym closed permanently with the pandemic back a year and a half, a little over a year and a half ago. What are we at, 20 months now with the pandemic? And cut some of the memberships up that you have that you may love, but you might be able to find alternatives that are less for you and less for the children. If children are in expensive activities, then maybe you could cut them down. Maybe there's some activities in the community, through the Boys and Girls Club or the local Y that the children can go to instead of some more expensive activity. They may be fine with it. Some of the clothing expenses that you made the clothes are maybe just fine. They do fit the children, and they don't need to have new stuff every year. Just again, you save new things for the holidays, for the Christmas, Hanukkah time, and you need to really readjust what you're doing to reset some expectations you might have. But yeah. It's doable, and I think that. I find that when people have to do the financial statements, and you may want to look at the long form, just if you feel like there's a long form and a short form financial statement that we have in Massachusetts, you can get them on the court's website. And if you do need to fill out the short form, pull up the long form and see what everything that's listed and make sure you're not missing anything. Because I think when people do their actual expenses, they will realize how much money they are actually spending and how they can cut expenses.
Yeah.
And there's no way out. If you want to get divorced, you have to do the financial statements. And if you earn under $75,000, it's a short form, and over $75,000, it's a long form. And then you really figure that out, and it'll help you with the budgeting.
Right. And there are many things that go onto that form that people think of as essential that may not be essentials. So, for instance, do we need the highest level of cable TV subscription? Right. And the answer will be for many people, yes, we do. But let's stop and think about it. Do we really need that?
Yeah. Do so one of the things. Right. Whole foods. It's whole paycheck, actually. So one of the things that I did after my divorce, because I needed to cut back my expenses, everyone has to. It's just, a woman's standard of living as well as a man typically drops after divorce because there's not enough income. So I did things like on my car insurance, I raised the deductible. So that lowers your premium. So that is something to check into. If you had to obviously be a good driver.
I would be careful about that, Diane.
Yes, but I'm just saying that is one way. You're a good driver and you have some cash, just raise the deductible. Another way too is doing the same thing with your home insurance, because sometimes those deductibles are really low because that returns a higher premium. So if you do just a slightly higher deductible on your home insurance, that could bring the cost down too. I also called all the utility companies. I called Verizon. I think I was doing cable at that time through them. They actually took $20 off my bill because I said I had gone through a divorce and I couldn't afford it anymore. So out of the goodness of their hearts, they took $20 off my bill. So, just doing things like that. I called the garbage company and realized that if I got a smaller can, my monthly bill would be less. And no one ever told me that. I didn't need as big of a garbage can because it was just me and the kids. So I got a smaller can, and hence I paid a lower amount per month.
I think that's pretty amazing that you can actually negotiate these things that we assume are fixed. But I want to go back to the insurance stuff. I would actually, that wouldn't be an item that I would go through. I mean, one of the challenges that happens with—
I did. So I did. I was fine.
We're all under stress, right? Yeah. And the likelihood of actually getting a car accident increases when you're going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. Right? And so therefore, I would say maybe we want to not increase a deductible.
But also you would want to think of, are you not driving much? So many people are working remotely. And can you call your insurance agent, and can you get the low mileage portion of your for your car, because the mileage is so little. For the last year or so, and you don't intend to drive very far because you're not going to go back in the office for another 6-8 months. If you do that at all next year, then maybe you can get a lower mileage on your car insurance, and that may decrease it. Yep. So talk to your agent about it. See if there's any options that you can do. I would agree with Chris. I went randomly lower the deductible you need to have insurance and just make sure that you're protected. But you know, talk to the professionals about that, your insurance agent, because they know you, they know your driving style, and see if there are any options that you can change on the policy, and also on all the policies that you may have insured with them, because there may be ways to do it. And I agree. You can negotiate with some of the providers that you have, not always, but it's worth a call and worth a try. Mm-hmm.
So one other line item that I think is ripe for the chopping block is just a general item of buying stuff. And so a friend of mine, whom I was doing some planning for, was telling me last month that she gets one Amazon package a day, right? And I don't think that's actually out of the ordinary that much. I get quite a few Amazon packages every month, probably not one a day, but quite a few. And it indicates that we're buying a lot of stuff, right? And in a lot of cases, stuff we don't need.
Well, I mean, that depends. You know, for me, I don't go out as much. So I'm buying all my groceries and my, you know, toilet paper and paper towels online. But it's easier to track when you do it that way and go back through your credit cards. And that's what, when I work with clients, that's what I do. I have them, I work very closely with them and their expenses, because like you said, a lot of people do not fill them out, do not even put a little time into the financial statements. And so they really don't have a good picture of what their expenses are. So, you know, I tell people, go back to your credit cards, make categories and see where you're spending your money. And then you'll find that there are ways, you know, you'll realize that you don't need all that stuff.
Yeah. Can we talk about the big item here, which is housing? And I think we mentioned briefly that cutting housing costs is difficult. Right, but it's also something that might have to be done. I don't know how that works with your clients, Debbie, but what Diane and I see a lot is that a lot of the time the lower earning spouse gets a marital home and wants to keep it. And oftentimes, I know we're trying to be gender neutral here, but oftentimes it is she, and oftentimes she can't afford it. Right. And so that's a fundamental decision that gets made in the divorce process, whereby sometimes people make choices that have consequences afterwards.
You know, what I do with clients is that, and we often do this in collaborative law and mediation, is that we look toward goals. What are your goals? Short-term, long-term goals. And why do you want those goals? Because if the plan is to move to Western Mass in the long run, or move to another community near your family, somewhere in Massachusetts or wherever or if there's another place that you intend to go to, that you need to talk about that early on and come up with how you're going to achieve those goals. And if the goal and the short-term goal is to stay in the house for the stability of the children, that makes sense. As this, the seminars that I've been to, I'm a guardian ad litem in addition to being a lawyer, and I've had to go to a lot of guardian ad litem trainings and a lot of continuing legal ed, or I do go because I think it's important for my law practice and my guardian ad litem practice. And I really think it's important to figure out what the long-term goal is. And if it's if you keep the child in the home for a year, that's helpful for the children if you have kids. If you don't have kids, then do need to do that. And don't do things for spite. Do things for that what you really need and what your goals are. And when people sit down and really focus in on what their long-term goals are, their short-term outlook may change. So I think that's something that's really important to do. We work toward goals in collaborative law mediation. I think that's the way to do things, because it may save a lot of money in the long run if you look at your short and long-term goals.
I think it's an important point. There is a lot of the time people who are going through divorce are focused on maintaining the material status quo, right? On maintaining things as it were, as much as is possible, with the exception of the spouse whom they want to move out, right? But the status quo, oftentimes doesn't work and will change anyway. Right?
Yep, I'm at a loss for words right now.
You're at a loss for words. Goodness gracious.
I'm at a loss for words.
Must be the first time, Diane.
Oh, dear. Well, I just, I have a client right now, and she wanted to know whether she should take some of her money and pay down the mortgage to reduce her mortgage payment. And that's, Deb, I said to her, well, is this your forever home? What is your plan with this home? And she said, no, it's not. Probably, you know, I would probably end up moving. And I said, well, then I would not put the money into it right now, you know, just because that's not her long-term goal. Yeah, you can recoup that money, but you might, it's just, if you're going to be leaving in the next couple of years, it's not worth to do something like that.
Actually, it has a potential of reducing that person's flexibility. Right, is that it's helpful to have financial assets for flexibility. Right. And if you sink them into the mortgage, then you lose that.
Right. And, you know, you may not be able to put a down payment on a smaller home. So, again, like you said, it's really important to look at your long-term goals. And the big question, is that your forever home? And that really does make people stop and think, because she changed her tune after that. She was like, oh, okay, I understand now.
I think a lot of the time we're focused on the home and the home buying process. So I mentioned earlier that people have a tendency to want to hang on to their home, but even if they don't, they want to go out and buy another one.
Right.
And that can be a challenge also. Because mortgage lenders will lend you as much money as they think that you can afford without skipping payments. And the way that I describe that is that they will make sure that you can actually eat some, like they will make sure that you'll have bread and peanut butter, right? But they, at the maximum levels of what they will give you, it won't leave you enough for the jelly.
No. Because they qualify you on about 43% of your gross income, and that's your gross. So take away taxes, that doesn't leave a whole lot of income after paying the mortgage. So that's a really important point.
Right, and not a lot of income to pay all of the other expenses that you need to have.
You also have to weigh the cost of renting in the Boston area, especially because it's very expensive to rent. So you have to balance that out with looking at what your objectives are, what your goals are in the long term, and how you're going to reach those long-term goals. Because if you have to have a plan, and I think that people that are going through divorce are, you know, they're emotionally, they're very emotional. It's very difficult. So if people are feeling that way, go talk to a counselor, a therapist. Many people have insurance through their work, and use that benefit that you have, because I think that will help you focus on what your goals are going to be and figure out what's going to be best for you. If you have children, you and the children on a long-term basis, then you'll have to talk to your spouse about that to try to figure out what's the best thing for you to do once you figure out what you want yourself.
Yeah. You know, another option too, that we didn't talk about, is instead of when, you know, a lot of times people are like, okay, I want to buy this person out, or we need to sell the home. But there are situations that will work when both parties will co-own the home for a couple of years to like wait until, you know, just for that transition period for the kids to get used to this new thing of mom and dad not being together. And so it is possible that for a couple of years, the parties can co-own the home and share the expenses if it's possible. Of course, there has to be enough income on the person who's out of the house to pay their own rent and then help with maybe half the mortgage payment. But in a situation, again, we're talking when child support's not enough, so maybe that's not always an option, but that does help at least families transition and get used to the situation for a couple of years. And then they can say, okay, yes, I'm ready to sell the house. Right. And that's probably typically what's going to happen at that point.
Right. One of the things you mentioned earlier, Debbie, is about setting goals and stuff like that. Right. So something that happens when a couple is on the way to divorce is that there is less communications, and there may not be a realization yet that a divorce might come. Right? But a lot of the goals that the couple might have then become very implicit, right? Is that they don't talk about it. Right. And then and then, of course, a divorce happens. And that's an opportunity, in fact, to make all of these goals and other things explicit. And when you do make them explicit, then it allows people to move forward in a more efficient way.
You know, I find it so interesting you said that, Chris, because sometimes in my mediation cases, people come into my office, well, pre-pandemic, people used to come into my office, now it's by Zoom, but they hadn't talked until they get to my office or do we get on Zoom. And I find that so interesting that you know, they need to communicate with each other. And that's also why I like the collaborative law process, because we do have a coach model in Massachusetts that we use. We use a one coach model where the coach is part of a team with the two lawyers and often, or sometimes a financial professional, depending on the circumstances. If we need it, we bring in a financial professional. I find that the coach is really helpful on helping with the emotional issues and helping the parties communicate. And I find it a really successful process I wish more people would participate in, because I think it's not as well known as mediation is in here in Massachusetts, but it's a really wonderful model.
Yeah, I think everyone loves the collaborative law process when they touch it. So we've talked a lot about cutting expenses. Cutting expenses is depressing, and at least a lot of people find that it is. And so there is another way out. And Diane, you mentioned that it's about increasing income instead.
Right.
How might one increase income?
Well, you know, a lot of times a parent can't increase their income if their children are younger, but there are ways if they're working, they may have to pick up a side job or something, or go back to school and be educated for more, you know, to get a higher paying job. And it's not something always people want to hear. In my own situation, I was a stay-at-home mom. I was a stay-at-home mom for 18 years, and I decided that I was going to do something. And I got into this business. And so when I'm working with clients, you know, I tell them it's possible. You can really do anything. You don't have to accept the situation that you're in. And a lot of people, you know, don't see a way out, especially a stay-at-home mom or someone who's making less money than their husband feels really depressed. And it's like, well, what am I going to do now? And it's hard. It is very hard. And you just really have to pick yourself up and get out there and try to find something that you can do. For me, it was like, I wanted to know how to handle my finances. So I started the CFP course, the Certified Financial Planner. And then that led me to the CDFA. And I just loved it. That's exactly where I wanted to be, because I really wanted to help people during the divorce process. I had no prior knowledge in this area. And I just worked at it and quickly moved myself up. And, you know, I tell that story to my clients and they're always like, oh, so there's hope for me. I said, of course there's hope for you. There's always hope for you.
Right. And there is hope in many different ways. I mean, not everyone wants to become a divorce expert, although nope. One of the things that's interesting is that of the people that all three of us know who work in divorce, many of them have gone into it because of their divorce or triggered by their divorce. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Yes, that's exactly. My attorney who handled my case, I was doing a lot of my own discovery, and he said, you know, you should think about doing a paralegal. And so I thought about it and I said, well, you know, and it just, that got me into the idea of divorce. And then I just kind of found my way into the financial world.
There are other ways to do it. Like I've had people there who have gone different ways than that. For instance, an engineer, stay-at-home mom, decided to go get a master's degree in engineering. And I thought that was brilliant. I mean, one of the challenges of being a stay-at-home mom is that even though you might know a lot, right, from a job market perspective, they look at you as if you have no experience. Mm-hmm. And so going back to school to get that master's in engineering gets that person back on the on the ramp where she will get where she has a legitimate way, if you will, to get a regular job at the normal pay. Right. And so some others like that is I've had a person there who was going to school to be a nurse practitioner. Right. And so and some various other things like that. So it's entirely doable, and it might have to be budgeted. Right. Is that maybe something you budget up front? Is that we financial planners will tell people don't spend your capital. Right. But sometimes there is a good reason to do that when it's an investment related thing, investment in yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I went to law school nights. I didn't go during the days. It took me 4 years nights, and it's even a blur for 4 years. But after that, you have a, you know, you graduate, you take the bar, and you have a law degree. So it's a great way to go. Also, the program that I teach in at Suffolk University is a great, it's a really good program. It's approved by the American Bar Association. It's right in Boston. And I think it's, the students are wonderful. It's the eclectic group of students. And I just absolutely love teaching there.
What are you teaching there?
Last semester I taught family law. The winter session I taught, what was it called? It was a diversity, acceptance, and wellness. It was a great class. And I've taught litigation, and I've taught ethics and legal practice skills, also called fundamentals early on. So I've taught a bunch of classes at Suffolk. It's a really wonderful program, and I totally support it. So there's a lot of things people can do. We also have a brand new green economy. I think it's going to be closer than we think. There'll be more jobs in the area. I think that electric cars will be coming out. So there may be more opportunities than people think of that they can look into. And we're in the you know, wealth of academia in Massachusetts. There's a lot of opportunities that people can take. It does cost money, but there are also loans out. I mean, I took loans out to go to law school. It took me a long time to pay them off, but I paid every penny back, and it's something that you can do. So don't just say, I can't do anything, but you have so many options and so many opportunities to consider.
Yeah. Even not living in the city, people who are working at home now, there's a new, it's not really new, but a new profession where you have people who will go run errands for you. So if, you know, you're working at home, you don't get out, there are people that will go and do stuff. So I have someone that helps me, and because I also have a disability, but she does errands for me. She takes things to the dry cleaner. She'll do all kinds of things, and she charges me for it. So I don't know, you know, she's making extra money. I don't know if she could really support herself, but she has a whole clientele up here in Cape Ann. And you know, that's something that someone could do. Another thing that I did as well was this is just to raise some extra money. It's not to, you know, really support yourself, but I sold a lot of stuff on eBay back then. eBay was different because it was more of a auction type thing. And, so I sold a lot of stuff on eBay, some of the kids, you know, clothing, and, you know, it was good stuff basically. And I was able to take a vacation with the money that I made by selling some things on eBay. So for some extra income, there are a lot of options.
Yeah, in fact, there's things that people don't think about as being profitable. I think you mentioned at one point, Diane, dog walking. Mm-hmm. Right. So tell us about dog walking.
Well, I had a client in Cambridge, and she walked a lot of dogs because she had a very good income. I don't remember where it was. I don't think it was six digits, but it was figures, but it was pretty far up there. Mm-hmm. And she did a great job.
Meaning it was an income that was high enough that she could live on it.
No, she could. It just, you know, she did live on it. And she was a professional dog walker.
Although I have to say that sometimes it can be hard, right? Because after you told me that story a few years ago, then my dog died, and then I missed my dog in the walks. Yeah. And so I went and applied to be a dog walker, and I was rejected.
Well, there's also this app called Rover, I guess. So if you need a dog sitter, you can go to Rover. So, you know, there's lots of opportunities. You could be a driver, you know, Uber and, you know, DoorDash and all these things. Like, there are things out there. It may not be what you've considered, but there are ways, if you need something temporarily, to go out there and get something.
Right. So I think what happens right at the time that people get divorced is that it's a time where the cash flow is negative, where expenses are greater than revenue. And we've talked about how we need to cut those expenses, about how we might increase those revenues. So I think it takes longer to increase the revenue than to cut expenses, right? And then there is in many divorces, not all of them, there is some form of division of significant or reasonably significant financial assets. And so what do you guys think about people raiding the financial assets?
I'm going to say our famous two words: it depends.
Oh,
it really depends on what that money is. you know, again, and what it's earmarked for and what your goals are.
Right.
I think, are you referring to maybe taking some money out of your retirement?
Yeah, I think that seems to be a fairly common thing. I mean, I've had people take money out of retirement for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. And, it's usually not a very good thing to do.
No, because
people rationalize that they'll put it back. And in reality, they never put it back.
Yeah, no, I try to really understand why somebody wants to do that. Maybe they just don't realize they have some other options, and maybe they don't really realize the impact of taking money out and what it's going to have on their future. So it really depends on the situation. If it's a dire situation, that's one thing, but just so that you can live in a house to take money out of retirement, no, definitely not.
I think the key is really looking at what your expenses are and trying to cut them if possible, because a lot of clients of mine, I just look at what they're spending money on, and as I think we've talked about, you don't need packages every day from Amazon, and try to figure out how can you cut your expenses, and that should be probably a place to start before you start raiding the retirement funds.
I agree. We agree.
Yeah, so retirement funds are very expensive source of funds, right? Is that first of all, you're going to have to pay taxes and penalties on them if you're less than 59 and a half. So you have to count, say, as a rule of thumb, say 30%. And so you're taking a dollar out and you're only getting 70 cents. Right. And the other thing is that you're robbing yourself of future income when that happens. So for every dollar that you take at 50 years old, and that's another rule of thumb that I have developed, is that you lose $5 in retirement income.
Wow. Yeah. And that's just because of the growth, right, Chris?
Yeah. And it's not replaceable.
Right.
It's just not replaceable.
What about borrowing against your retirement account? Not taking money out, but just taking a loan out against your retirement account. What are your thoughts about that?
I think that's easier, right? It's if you do it before divorce, it complicates the division of assets, right?
Yep.
And it certainly complicates a quadro if you have to do a quadro, right? Yep. But it's easier in the sense that if you take a loan out of against a 401k, you have 5 years to pay it back, right? And if you do pay it back, then it's as it was before. I think it's difficult because it has to be a budget related thing, right? Is that you have to be able to do it, right? Okay. So yeah, the 401k, a loan from a 401k is actually a little bit easier in the sense that the repayment is often taken out of the paycheck, mm-hmm. right? So you don't even have to decide, maybe I'll skip this one this month, right? It gets taken out of the paycheck. And so you have to decide on other things, whether you want to skip or not.
Right. And the other thing too, is when you borrow and you're paying it back, you're using money to pay back that you're going to get out again and pay tax on it again. So you're using after-tax money to pay that loan. You're putting your money back into the 401k. And then when you take that money out in retirement, you're taxed again. So it's...
But to answer Debbie's point there, it's more helpful than taking a distribution. If you do a distribution, you'll never take it out. You'll never put it back in.
No, so. You'll never put it back. I just recently had a client who's getting $150,000 via a quadro from her ex, and she wanted to just take the money and buy a house. And I said, but you're selling your own house, right? Yeah, you know, in a couple of months. I said, well, why don't you just wait? Because what she didn't realize is that $150, she would have to pay income tax on it.
And penalty.
I forget if she was under 59. But once I, you know, that when I explained that to her, she did not know. And she wasn't my client during the divorce. I just did the quadro. And so she was like, oh, okay. And no one had really explained that to her, but that was her goal, was to take that $150 and put it down on a piece of property. So what I said, I think the better thing to do is just wait until you sell your house, put that $150 in retirement where it belongs and wait until your house sells. And she will have enough proceeds from that to put down the payment then.
So, sorry, go ahead, Debbie.
I think that's why us lawyers like to use financial professionals, because I think people don't realize, they may want to do certain thing, buy something with certain monies and, the property, et cetera. And there are tax consequences of some things. There are issues that you have, the penalties. And so it's really important to make sure that you talk to someone that has financial knowledge. I think that we do that in a collaborative law process. When I do mediation, if it's a unique financial issue, we suggest the clients that to go in the mediation clients to go talk to a financial person, because you don't want to get taxed later when you don't realize what you're just because you want to do something. I find that people want to do certain things and they don't think it through. They don't get the professional help that they need because they don't want to spend the money up front. But if you look at the how much money you have to spend later on the tax issues, it's money well spent on the upfront if you're going through divorce. And so it's really, really important to do that.
Yeah. I mean, normally when you transfer money back and forth between retirement accounts pursuant to a separation agreement, if it's part of the divorce, there is no tax complications or implications. So we're talking about people who then take that money out of retirement. It's not the transferring back and forth that happens in a divorce. There are no tax issues if you put it into your own retirement account, but it's when you take a distribution, or instead of that, my client who was going to use the 150, that would have been a taxable event. And she would not have received 150. They would have withheld 20%. So she wouldn't even get 150. She would get 20% less.
Or purchasing the house. If one person wants to keep a house and they bought it at, I don't know, $150,000 back, many years ago, and it's worth $750,000 now. And if they one person wants to keep the house and they put no work into it. So there may be capital gains issues if that person wants to buy the other out and they don't think that through. So that's why it's good to also talk to a financial professional.
Yep.
So what's the worst examples that you guys can think of a use of a 401k distribution that results from a divorce?
To take a vacation.
How about you, Debbie?
I don't suggest people do it. It's just
we don't either. It's just
what's the worst thing that can what's the worst thing that you can do if you take money?
I just don't want people to do it. I don't even want to go there. I just think it's important that we really think things through and make sure that you have the best way to save money that you possibly can. That's the focus of my practice. Try to work things out amicably. Try to save money whenever you can. Get advice up front, because it's going to save you a lot of money in the long run. And it just makes so much sense. Right. And people will react, I think, in divorce on an emotional level. So you've got to make sure that you really just try to get your irrational self back and then think it through. Because when you buy anything, if you're going to buy a new house, married or unmarried, you want to think that through and say, okay, let's work the budget out. Can I afford this? And most people will think, or buy a car, any of that. You want to think it through. Can you afford it? Can you meet the monthly payments every month and still pay your rent or mortgage and pay your bills? So we all do this when you purchase something. So you got to really think it through. So that's what we're talking about here.
The worst example I can think of is someone who went and took money out of their 401k to get plastic surgery.
Oh, yeah, that too. It's either vacations or plastic surgery.
But the thing that it points to, right, is that when people do that, right, it's a little bit about stress release. Mm-hmm. It's about changing getting a different view, and it's obvious divorce is stressful, right? But I think it needs to be recognized that it is a response to stress, or often it is a response to stress, and it can be treated in different ways, right?
The other thing that we haven't talked about is credit card debt, and I think that is incredibly important, that you don't use the credit cards or don't buy anything unless you can pay it off the next month. because I've seen people with such high credit card debt, and it's really hard to get it down, and they're paying very high interest. And can you move your money to a lower interest credit card, and then work on budgeting paying that down, because that debt has to be paid back. I understand school loans, because that is giving you a benefit of getting yourself educated in another area so you can make more money. But credit card debt, just buying things, is really difficult, and it takes a long time to pay it down. Yeah. So you want to be really careful if you're going to go through divorce, just look at what you're spending money on and be really careful. I mean, it's so funny now when you think about it, especially as we're getting to be closer to post-pandemic, or I guess we're getting there, aren't we? We hope so, right? But think about what are you spending your money on? I mean, most of us don't use much cash anymore. We use our credit cards when we go food shopping or buy anything. I mean, we just use our phone and let it ding on the when you're checking out of places, but it's still a credit card. You're still charging your food to a credit card. But, you know, look at what you're spending money on and see how much money that's going out for credit card debt, and stop doing it right now if you don't really need it.
I mean, we would never encourage people to load up their credit cards. Sometimes people feel like they have to. And one thing to know about that is that it is often possible to renegotiate a credit card debt, right, is that you may not have to pay it entirely. Of course, it's going to ding your credit score and everything, but, you know, it's do you want to ding your credit score, or do you want to pay less, you know?
Yeah, well, that's another thing too, is that if you are looking to buy a house or a car or anything like that, carrying that kind of credit card debt affects your FICO score. And lenders are looking at those FICO scores. So that, you know, if a home is in your future, you need to pay off those credit cards.
Right. And sometimes there are other debts that are negotiable. And it's not so much negotiable as it can be worked with. So for instance, student loan debt, if you happen to have a bunch of student loan debt, if you have parent loans, for instance, it is possible to maneuver so that your payments will go way down, right? So there's one person that we worked with recently that had a payment due. I mean, not immediately, because we have a moratorium on student loan payments right now. But she will be due for something like $1,900 in monthly payments, right? And she makes what, 70,000, right? And so it is not workable, right? And so the thing about student loans is there are many different ways that you can actually maneuver them. And so we did, and she ends up paying something like $240 a month.
Wow, that's right? A huge difference.
It's a huge difference. It's a life-changing difference.
That's life-changing.
You have to think about these kind of stuff also. And in the worst possible case, right, and we don't want anyone to go there, but in the worst possible case, I mean, you might have to do bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Which is another reason not to take money out of your 401k or IRA, right? Is because retirement assets are usually protected in bankruptcy.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, we kind of got away a little off topic.
But, we did.
a little, but that
sometimes
happens.
Sometimes we do that.
Yeah. But I think the bottom line is, you know, what we're trying to do here is give examples of ways, you know, when support, and we're talking specifically child support, it can be alimony too. When that's not enough, then you really have to explore and revisit what you're spending and your cash flow and your everyday living expenses to see what it is that you don't need, what you can cut back on, and then to also consider your long and short-term goals. And how is, you know, spending now, how is that going to affect your future? Is that going to ruin those goals, or is it going to enhance your journey to that goal?
And also looking at the process you're going to use to get divorced. I think you need to really figure that out. And do you want to spend a lot of money on litigation, or do you want to try to resolve it amicably? And I think most people, if you ask them, do you want to resolve your divorce in an amicable way, then most people, I think, will say yes. Especially if you have children, because you want to preserve your relationship with the other spouse, because you're gonna raise those children together. as they grow older. There'll be graduations, sports events, school events, weddings, grandchildren. I mean, it's a long-term thing. So you really need to look at how are you going to maintain that relationship on the long run. So as you're going through this process, think that through.
I think it's important, right? Because litigation is awfully expensive, and it is money that could be spent on other things. Right? I mean, it's not rare. The case of people spending a year's worth of college tuition on divorce is not rare, unfortunately.
No, it's not. I see it all the time.
And what's so interesting is that the percentage is so high of cases that settle amicably before a trial. So you spend all this money on litigation if you do go that route, and it's 95 to 97% of the cases get settled before trial. So why not try to settle it early using an alternative dispute resolution process? It makes so much sense.
Yep. And I believe that you're going to be heard a lot better if you go through a process like collaborative or mediation as opposed to litigation. Your needs are going to be heard, and we're going to try to help you resolve the issues and help you achieve, address your needs and achieve your goals as best we can.
As best we can. Yeah. I mean, it's a messy process, but then the best we can do is the best we can, right? And so, any last words of wisdom, Debbie?
No, I think we said it all, but I think people need to look at their goals and figure out how they're going to reach them versus how they're going to try to get the other parent or partner, depending if they have children or not, and make them suffer. I don't think that's the way to go. You want to try to look at the financial aspect of things and your goals and what your needs are to try to achieve them. So I think that's the best way to move forward on this and how to save money if child support's not enough.
How about you, Diane?
I basically agree. My goals when I got divorced was to have relationships with my kids. And that was really the most important thing to me. I had to let go of a lot of the issues. I did not want the divorce, but I'm in a place now where I'm very happy that it happened. today is my daughter's 30th birthday. So we are celebrating her birthday in Boston tonight and with my other daughter and her husband. And so it's, to me, that's the most important thing. And, getting through your divorce and keeping in mind that your children will always be there. And that to me is the best thing. So getting through this process the best you can. So that goal of, always being with your children, even when they're adults and having a great time is really what should be first and foremost.
So basically, we're looking for people to, when possible, cut expenses for the short run and plan for the long run.
Yep.
Right?
Yes, definitely.
And go to alternative dispute resolution.
Yep. Yeah. And, a lot of women think they're in, and men too, that they will never get out of this situation. That's just not true. There really is a good life after divorce, and you just have to let people like Chris, myself, and Deb help you get there. So those are my final words.
Okay, very cool. So I guess that's the end of this podcast. So need to remind everyone that circumstances are different for everyone. And so if you are in the midst of divorce or considering divorce, keep in mind that a podcast does not replace a consultation with a professional. So we are meeting again here next week, and we're aiming to talk about stock options, I think. Is that right, Diane?
We're trying to, yes.
Okay, so we'll try to do that. And so in the meantime, if you need to contact us for anything, is divorcefriday@gmail.com. So Diane, what do we say now?
Well, everybody, TGIDF. Thank goodness it's Divorce Friday. We will see you next Friday and have a great weekend. And Deb, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.